Support for The Trend on WNIN comes from members of the Local Programming Fund. I'm Micah Schweitzer. The average year sees around 10,000 severe storms, thousands of floods, and about 1,000 tornadoes in the U.S. And even as weather prediction and measurement has gotten very sophisticated, there's still a role for human observation. Today, weather spotting. We're joined by Adam Gruppe. He's deputy director of the Evansville-Vandenberg Emergency Management Agency. Great to have you on the show.
Thank you for having us.
And also in the studio, Bob Pointer. He's a trained weather spotter, a ham radio operator, and a retired police officer from the Evansville Police Department. Welcome to you.
I'm glad to be aboard.
And so the reason for weather spotters, Adam Gruppe, is because radar can't do it all. We see lots on radar, but there are limitations.
Well, technology, which keeps getting better and better, can still only do so much for us. Even recently, we just got an upgrade to the weather radar in Paducah and also up in Owensville, where they increased its capabilities by sending the signal in two directions at once. And even with that, there's still a need for what they call ground truth, eyes on the ground, whether we see something different than the radar would suggest or we're confirming what they see. It's always going to be a very important thing to have trained citizens out there to confirm or contradict what the radar says.
Does that happen a lot, that you see something different than what the radar is showing?
Quite often, they can look at radar and say, well, you should be having thunderstorms and rain right now. And we said, well, no, it's a little cloudy. One of the issues is that, you know, radio waves follow or don't follow the horizon. They go in a straight line. So the farther you are away from that radar transmitter, the higher the beam is. So what's happening at 15 or 20,000 feet can be completely different than what's happening at ground level.
I see. And our houses, Bob Pointer, are not at 15 or 20,000 feet. We're on the ground, and that's why we need human eyes on the ground looking for what's actually happening where we live.
Yeah, that's quite right. When you're on the ground several miles away from the radar, you can see things totally differently. Also, the radar sometimes cannot see through very heavy clouds, and there may be a tornadic signature inside these clouds that the radar, they're not real sure. So they very well may call our ground spotters for verifications. In other words, what are you actually looking at?
And Adam mentioned the National Weather Service in Paducah, which is that's the weather service closest to us. That's the one that watches over this area. When do they call you into action? What happens? How does that work?
There's weather alerts, and it's put out on the radio and the internet. If there's a bad storm coming our way, our local ham radio group activates a weather spotter group, and we actually initiate going out and looking. If we see anything, then we have different means of relaying this to Paducah.
And what kinds of things do you look for?
Winds of over 60 miles an hour, hail, the usual things that would set this storm apart from your average thunderstorm.
And what about things like wall clouds or tornadic activity, funnel clouds, that sort of thing? Do you go out and look for those sorts of things, or when those things are happening, should one be one presumably shouldn't be outside looking for them, right?
Well, that's we have a lot of well-meaning people that will go out and look. A lot of people are fascinated by weather, and when a storm comes up, they'll go out and scan the horizon, and they'll see what they think is a tornado. And they'll rush in and they'll call 911 and they'll report that there's a funnel cloud at Diamond and 41. Dispatch has to verify, so they'll send a squad car who'll drive out there and look and say, well, there's absolutely nothing here, although there is a funny looking cloud up there, where the trained weather spotter knows what to look for. When he looks at what the other citizens may think is a tornado, he recognizes that as just a weird-looking cloud. A lot of well-meaning citizens call in reports what we call pink flamingos. They're well-meaning, but they're absolutely non-essential. This term came from a storm one time where a guy just, people want to be recognized and they want to participate. There wasn't really a whole lot going on except the wind was blowing. Well, when his neighbor's pink flamingo blew across his yard, he thought that was significant enough that he reported it to the Paducah Weather Service. And it was like, really?
And I imagine when actual severe weather is happening, there's not a lot of room for extraneous information, Adam Gruppe.
No, and excuse me. That's why Bob said there are specific parameters that the Weather Service wants to be notified of. And short of that, it may be good background information, but not worthy of taking their time to give them that. And Bob had said something, too, that reminded me there is a very big difference in what we do as trained weather spotters and what you see on the Discovery Channel with storm chasers.
I see these guys who have these souped-up cars, and they go driving into the eye of
completely unrelated. As an agency administrator, I have to put on my safety manager hat and say that we do not sponsor, we do not encourage, we do not solicit people to be storm chasers. What the National Weather Service training provides is the knowledge and information that you need to know to walk outside your door or maybe drive to a place with a better view and be stationary and observe, know what you're observing, and to report those observations. We do not have, with the EMA, we do not have storm chasers. We do not condone that. It's not generally a safe thing to do. We train spotters, again, usually from fixed locations with fixed parameters on what they're going to report.
And sometimes they report things as they're happening, and sometimes they report things after the fact, too.
Exactly. The most important information at the time is what are you seeing now real time? Is that a wall cloud, or is that, like Bob had said, a funny-looking cloud that just happens to be triangle-shaped? The term for that officially is called scud clouds. They could look very nasty, but without there being rotation, they're not generally of concern, versus a real wall cloud with rotation dropping out from it and coming to the ground or not coming to the ground. If it's a tornado, it's touching the ground. If it's a funnel cloud, it's not touching the ground. And those are some of the things you'll learn in the spotter class Saturday.
Yeah, that is coming up this Saturday at the Evansville Red Cross on the 23rd, Saturday the 23rd from 9 until noon. And I gather that this training is somewhat unusual because a lot of times these trainings are done as webinars, and this one's actually going to be done in person.
Yes, like all government agencies, the National Weather Service is trying to save as much money as possible. They're trying to get the most bang for their buck. Well, for our buck, really. And so what they do is they've been putting the classes on the internet where in a webinar format, and they're just not having the same kind of turnout that we have when we bring in people like Ricky Shanklin from the National Weather Service to come down and do a live training. So they did find some funding to do a couple of road trips to Owensboro, our area, Southern Illinois, and do that live spotter training. And we're having an amazing response to that so far.
So lots of people signing up. Who becomes a weather spotter? Who's attracted to this?
We have people from volunteer firemen to retired people to high school kids. It's actually a family event. If you as a child are old enough to sit through 4 hours of training and not be disruptive and you're capable of learning the information, you're invited to come. There really is no age limit. It's something that the family can do together, actually. We have a lot of families that actually are weather spotters.
We're talking about weather spotting with Adam Gruppe from the Evansville-Vandenberg Emergency Management Agency. And Bob Pointer is here as well. He is a trained weather spotter. What got you into weather spotting?
Well, I was ham radio operator first, and a lot of the hams were participating in weather spotter nets, and I got interested in that, and also through volunteer work with emergency management, and having seen the catastrophes that these storms can create, it's a fascinating field to be able to participate in these things, where you feel like you're actually doing something to help your community. And the best thing about weather spotters is they're trained. They know what they're looking for. So when they do send reports into Paducah, they know that, they can be relied on these reports. Because sometimes the decision to make a tornado watch or a tornado warning may very well depend on that one report that that someone sends in, where they may see something on the radar. They're not quite sure, should we send out a tornado warning? And if that's not a real tornado, you'll cause businesses to close down. You'll cause hospitals to move patients. You'll cause a lot of things to go into effect, so you don't want to cry wolf too many times. But yet you don't want to miss that one time where, well, we're really not sure, so let's just keep it a watch, and then all of a sudden here a tornado drops out of a cloud. This is where your weather spotters are extremely important. They're on the ground, they're close to the activity, and if there's not any calling in from that area, the Paducah also keeps a list of weather spotters and a map of their location. So if they see something on the radar that looks pretty serious, they may call someone from their data list and say, okay, you're the closest to what we're looking for. Look to the northeast and tell us what you see. And just one report may make the difference of setting off the weather sirens or waiting just a little bit longer. Because when these tornadoes hit town, like the one that came through Evansville and killed several people, was an F3. Mm-hmm. Very shortly after that, the one that went through Owensboro was an F4. It didn't kill anybody, thank goodness. But the biggest difference was early warning. Evansville's stuck in the middle of the night. People did not have weather radios. They thought they, you know, just didn't need one. And a tornado basically snuck up on them. Owensboro, it was daytime. People were awake. They had plenty of warning. They knew it was coming. And that made all the difference in the world, was the warning. So that's where the weather spotters come in. Very important. They can help Paducah make the decision. Should we issue a warning, a watch, or just watch it for a little while?
I think it's very important to remind people, too, that meteorology is as much an art as a science. And the more information, the more data the forecasters have, the better product they can put out. Bobby just mentioned the November 2005 tornado. Both my boss, Sherman Greer, and I were woken up by the Weather Service with a phone call about 1:45, and they're saying, we don't know what's going to happen, but something is going to happen. You people need to get ready. And before that phone conversation finished, the tornado had hit the Knight Township Fire Station and is moving toward the trailer park. They couldn't put their finger on it, but they knew that something was going to be happening.
So this was a case where, you know, you got a phone call from the National Weather Service in Paducah, but what about people sleeping? I mean, what's the best way to actually get notified of something happening? And overnight events are always the most dangerous because of that.
Yes, the best way is to have multiple ways, really. But everyone should have a National Weather Service NOAA weather radio. They're $30 or less. A couple times a year, we actually get a grant to provide them free to lower-income people, senior citizens, schools. And the old excuse, well, it goes off all the time. That really isn't even valid anymore. When you buy it, you program it for the counties that you care about. If you live in Vandenberg County, I would program it for Henderson, Posey, and Vandenberg County. Majority of the storms come from the southwest. If you live in Warwick County, I would put Henderson, Davies, and Warwick, and Vandenberg and Warwick County in it then. Just one county to the west and south of you is all you really need. And it's quiet unless there's an alert, or you can hit the button and get the weather forecast. That's the first line of defense is the weather radios. We have a very good siren system in Vandenberg County. Posey County has sirens. Henderson has sirens. Warwick County has sirens. Gibson has sirens. But those are not meant to be a primary warning. Those are to tell people who are outside that something is happening and they need to get inside, turn on local media, 88.3, for example, and find out exactly what's going on. They're not meant to be heard inside the house. So many people will say, well, it was storming and I had my TV on and I have the air conditioner on and I didn't hear the weather sirens. And we're like, okay, you weren't supposed to hear the weather sirens. However, if you're sitting in your backyard mm-hmm. or you're at the park playing ball or you're playing golf, you will hear the sirens, and that's what they're meant for.
Speaking of radios, Bob Pointer, you're a ham radio operator, an amateur radio operator, as we've mentioned, and you said you use this in conjunction with your spotter activity. Now, Paducah does have a line that you can call in with your report, but talk about the role that two-way radio plays in this process for you.
Well, in several emergencies, tornadoes, floods, earthquakes, disasters like this, primary means of communications can fail. Like when the tornado came through town, you've got to remember that there's not only the population of Evansville that are going to be trying to use their telephones, but once the word is out on national news, thousands of people nationwide will be trying to call Evansville to see if their loved ones are okay. Well, when you get hundreds of thousands of people swamping the phone lines, they don't work anymore. Or the tornado, for example, could knock down all the telephone lines. So primary means of communication, cell phones are not reliable. Too many people are overloading the circuits. Amateur radio has the advantage that if you have a radio in your vehicle, you don't need the infrastructure. You just push the microphone button and you can talk for great distances. You can talk to an amateur from your vehicle doing weather spotting to his base station, who does have telephone capabilities and can call Paducah with your weather spotter report. Paducah also has ham radio facilities so that the vehicles can contact through a repeater and make reports directly. So we have the saying that when all else fails, ham radio prevails. We can get out when all other means of communications have failed.
Even at the Emergency Management Agency, during the ice storm that we had in 2008 that I'm sure everyone remembers.
Sure. We had no power for days or weeks on end.
Well, it hit Kentucky even harder than we had it. And the National Weather Service lost all their phone and data lines from Paducah. And we ended up having to contact the National Weather Service from our Emergency Operations Center via amateur radio to talk to them to find out they were out of the game, because that's the only way they had to communicate. Even their dedicated governmental hardline systems were not working, because those still go through the phone system. They transferred operations to Indianapolis. They transferred our information to Indianapolis, and we were actually in contact with the Indianapolis office.
Instead of Paducah.
They have a redundancy plan when they lose data communications or network or some issue that other offices pick up the slack. And so for probably about a week, we were working with the Indianapolis office of the National Weather Service.
Well, as we've mentioned, there's this live weather spotter training coming up. It's on Saturday, February 23rd from 9 until noon at the Evansville Red Cross. There are a couple others in the area as well, one on February 26th in Madisonville, and then one a little sooner than either of those at 6:30 in the evening on February 19th at the Davis County Courthouse Emergency Operations Center in Owensboro. And Adam Gruppe, what do people learn? What happens at these trainings?
Well, first of all, we want to encourage people to attend these courses. You only need to hit one. You can pick whichever one is the most convenient, closest to you, has the best time that works for you. And they are completely free, no cost, provided by the National Weather Service. You learn what you're looking at. You learn the difference between a scud cloud and a wall cloud. You learn the difference between a tornado and a funnel cloud. A lot of people use those terms interchangeably, but like I said, a tornado has to touch the ground, and a funnel cloud is aloft. Both the same thing, both air spinning in a circle at, 150, 200 miles an hour, but they're different. You learn that. You learn what to look at in cloud formations. You learn where to look in the storm to see different things. And you learn how to be safe when you're doing this. When to say, you know what, I need to go inside now to a safe place.
Well, we want to thank Adam Gruppe. He's the Deputy Director of the Evansville-Vandenberg Emergency Management Agency, and also Bob Pointer, a trained weather spotter. Thank you both for your time and for educating us on some important issues. Thanks.
Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
You're listening to The Trend.
This is The Trend on 88.3 WNIN-FM and online at WNIN.org. Coming up, we'll be exploring the local climate for entrepreneurship as Evansville gets ready for its second annual Startup Weekend. That's trending on WNIN. Support today comes from Evansville Day School announcing the Junior Pre-K Roundup Saturday, March 2nd at 9 and 10 a.m. for children turning 3 by September 15th. Learn more about the day school's programs like Global Language, Outdoor Learning, and the Arts. Reservations required through Karen Bales at 812-476-3039. Evansville Day School, preparing for college, preparing for life.
This is The Trend. I'm Micah Schweitzer, and our next guests are two of the organizers of Evansville's second annual Startup Weekend. Startup weekends happen in cities all around the world. Attendees arrive with an idea, and they have about 2 sleepless days to develop a viable business concept. Janet Efron is an entrepreneur in her own right and one of the organizers of Startup Weekend Evansville. Welcome to The Trend.
Thanks, Mike. I'm really glad to be here.
And on the phone from the offices of the Startup Weekend Mothership in Seattle is Demi Wetzel. And until recently, she was an Evansville entrepreneur. She now lives in Seattle. And she's also involved with Startup Weekend Evansville. Hi, Demi.
Hi.
And tell us, what is Startup Weekend?
Well, Startup did a great job at describing it. In a nutshell, it's a 54-hour event where people come, they pitch an idea, they join teams, they work very hard all weekend, like you said, very couple sleepless nights, and they work on a business model, kind of doing some customer validation throughout the week.
And you've been involved with Startup Weekend, now the company that oversees all of this. What's the connection between Startup Weekend, where you are in Seattle, and these events that happen globally in individual cities like Startup Weekend Evansville?
The connection is very strong, actually. Although we are headquartered in Seattle, we work very close with every city and every community where these events are held.
And this is a nonprofit organization?
Correct, yes.
So you get some of your money from the individual events that happen in cities?
Yeah, a little bit is the revenue from the events, but we also have some nice funding from some great partners and sponsors throughout the world.
So are the events that happen at Startup Weekends, are they basically the same from event to event, or are they tailored to the place where they take place?
Well, the general model of the weekend is essentially the same. We try that each event in every city has, kind of the style and the local flavor of wherever it is. So anywhere from, Turin to Evansville, we want each event to fully represent that community itself.
So, Janet Efron, how is Startup Weekend Evansville a reflection of Evansville? And you were present at the first one last year. A year ago, there was the first event.
Yeah, I was an organizer, and Demi was a participant, so it's kind of fun to be working on this one together. Evansville Startup Weekend, one of the first comments we had from a facilitator from Startup Weekend last year was how phenomenal the food was at our Startup Weekend. But I think just the sense of hospitality and enthusiasm and the presence of a lot of local business people who serve as coaches to support the participants, to give them advice, to mentor them, to maybe help them find connections, to help them ask the right questions. And it's wonderful because with the local business people and the local participants, they're really integrated in what their interests are and their concerns are. And I think that's a real benefit.
Demi, as Janet mentioned, you were a participant in that first Startup Weekend Evansville a year ago. What was that experience like for you as a young entrepreneur yourself?
I think anyone who knows me knows that my first year participating in Startup Weekend was totally life-changing. It was a great, fun event, but completely opened up the doors of entrepreneurship and the Evansville ecosystem that I had never seen before.
You you worked in social media entrepreneurship, and I know that you wrote a blog post about this where people would ask you, when are you going to get a real job? When are you going to stop playing around on the internet or whatever they thought you were doing? Talk a little bit about this, because now you do have the quote unquote real job. You're actually employed by a company, but it's still a startup. You're on a cell phone in part because Startup Weekend doesn't even have landlines at its headquarters in, I guess, true startup fashion. So compare and contrast the quote-unquote real job with the life of an entrepreneur.
I think it really, at least my opinion, real jobs are, whatever each person sees is maybe something that makes them money or if they're feeling fulfilled in work. I think the traditional, 9-to-5, walking into an office and wearing a suit every day is kind of not the normal thing anymore. And kind of comparing and contrasting, I guess you could say I have a real job. I mean, I was, you know, making money beforehand, but a little bit more stable now, of course. But I feel like, you know, it really hasn't lost any sort of the entrepreneurial kind of startup bootstrapping spirit that has actually kind of been elevated since coming up here.
So, Janet, she says this is becoming more of the norm, the startup environment, you know, getting out of the suits and the 9-to-5. Is this generational?
No, I don't think it's generational. I think all you have to do is look at the economic statistics, and the majority of economic growth is projected to come from small businesses. A startup doesn't simply mean building an app or something in the technology sphere. A startup could be a consumer product. It could be a service. It's basically finding a problem that nobody solved or finding a better solution to an existing problem. So I think entrepreneurship is across generations. And I mean, you guys can't see me, but Micah can look at how much gray is in my hair and know that I'm not a 20-something.
And you have your own small business, your own entrepreneurial venture that you're launching with your husband.
Yeah, well, actually, my husband and I have a consultancy, a business consultancy, but I'm starting to look at branching off from that and building some new things that are maybe a little less secure financially, but very, very exciting.
Yeah, talk a bit about that security, because that's always the big question. I mean, if security weren't an issue, I guess we would all do whatever we want to do, but that always is an underpinning question.
It is a huge question, and I think one of the benefits of Startup Weekend is that it teaches people that when you have a great idea, that's not enough. It teaches you how to effectively take action on that idea, how to develop a business plan, a really carefully formed business plan, how to really validate your business model and validate if there is a need, if the customers want what you think they want. I know in my own work I found, you know, maybe I had an idea and develop it, and then you find, yeah, I might think this is the greatest idea in the world. I might think this is the greatest solution to a problem, but until I get validation, I don't know, and I'm probably going to have to go back and tweak it. So I think that's where Startup Weekend benefits, because it starts teaching you how to go through those steps to build something successful.
What form does that validation take?
Validation could take the form of research into the existing markets. It's going to possibly be talking to possible consumers. I know last year, at least a couple of the teams were actually reaching out to people in the manufacturing sphere to see what would be feasible in manufacturing. We had another team that was looking at actually taking the energy from health club equipment and trying to put that back into the grid.
Oh, and like treadmills and stuff?
Yeah, yeah, which was a brilliant idea, except that they found as they were doing their validation, it wasn't economically feasible, so they had to tweak their project as they were going. But had they not been in that intense grinding through environment, they probably would have been going in the wrong direction.
Interesting, because it sounds like a great idea. Why not?
Oh, yeah, fabulous, except it isn't feasible right now.
How soon can you tell whether an idea is, you know, can somebody says, hey, I have this idea. Can you tell right away if that's going to work or not, or what does it take to know?
Oh, that's a tough question. I think that there are some ideas that it's easier to validate quickly. You can say, you know, maybe you have a small business model. It's pretty quick to validate. Is there an actual need in a region? You know, like if you say, oh, I'm going to open a restaurant or something, you can pretty quickly validate, are there customers? How are they already being served? Is this going into an overcrowded niche? I think there are other things that as you're developing, whether it be an app or some other service, that what you start developing may not be your final product, because you're going to have to keep tweaking it based on feedback and testing.
And, you know, to talk a bit more about the idea of a restaurant, that seems to be one where we all consider ourselves experts, right? Because we all eat, so we all know something about food. And I know I've seen restaurants that pop up and I think, really, another, you know, this yeah. kind of restaurant? Is that really what we need? And interestingly, sometimes they take off. Other times they don't. But how good are we as just people at judging what business a community can bear and what it can't?
Oh, you know, I think speaking only for myself, it's very easy for me to fall in love with my own idea. I mean, obviously, if I didn't think it was a great idea, I wasn't going to work as hard as I needed mm-hmm. to make it happen. And I think with restaurants, the ones who work are looking at the same problems every entrepreneur looks at. You know, what problem am I solving? What need am I meeting? If somebody else is already meeting the need, how am I meeting that need better than they are? And I think
competition.
Yeah, competition. Saying if I'm opening a coffee shop and you're opening a coffee shop and only one of us survives, what did that one do differently? They were aware of what their customers wanted and met the need in a different or better way.
Demi Wetzel, when you were working as an entrepreneur with your own startup here in Evansville, what did you need to succeed?
For me, what I found, especially since I was a little bit younger and not as much, you know, experience perhaps, the resources that I found within the Evansville community made such a difference to me because I'd always kind of wanted to start my own venture, but I wasn't sure how. And then after Startup Weekend, this, you know, incredible panel of resources was provided to me, and that just really helped me excel and get some answers that I needed.
Like what kinds of resources?
Human capital. In general,
human capital.
Who had experience. Yeah, people who had experience and were, you know, trying to help entrepreneurs such as myself. Nice, and would, you know, sit with me and tell me, okay, this is what you're doing. Action, or have you thought about, you know, perhaps trying it this way? Lots of great conversations that resulted in me kind of getting up and going.
Janet, is that what it's about? A community, about people?
It is. It's a lot about community. I mean, it's about people maybe have ideas and maybe have even laid out, oh, here's what I want to do. This is where you start taking action. And this is, I think, a part of what I see as a growing entrepreneurial ecosystem in Evansville, because ultimately it is a community. I mean, being an entrepreneur is incredibly hard. There are going to be the times that you say, man, you know, I'm working, you know, into the evenings every night, I'm working all weekend, and I might love what I'm doing, but at some point I have to say, am I crazy? And you need that outside community to say, well, yeah, you might be crazy, but it's still a good idea, keep working on it. Or to say, you know, who you really need to talk to is, or, well, this is good, but I think it's not going to fly because, so you might want to do this. And when we see the development of, you know, entrepreneurship someplace like, say, Silicon Valley, it's because you can't walk into a coffee shop without running into 20 or 30 other entrepreneurs all ordering their lattes. And what we're needing to do through Startup Weekend Evansville and through other entrepreneurial efforts in the city is start building that ecosystem, start building those connections of support, of places for critique, of places for advice.
Places, actual physical places?
Well, not physical places at this point. I guess I should say venues or opportunities. I mean, Startup Weekend is one. There are some other local opportunities. Tech on Tap, I know Gage supports some things. They did a pitching clinic not long ago to teach people how to pitch an idea. Because you can, again, you can have the best idea in the world, but if you can't pitch it, if you can't get the attention of an investor or partners, you're also not going to get off the ground.
Who can be an entrepreneur? I mean, it would seem like you have to have, again, going back to that question of security and stability, it would seem like you need to have money in the bank so that you can quit your job and then go do this thing and have a period of, you know, being in limbo before you get investors and so forth.
Yeah, we'd all love that, wouldn't we? I think you have to be fearless. Yeah, having some money in the bank is helpful. A lot of entrepreneurs, although it's the hard way to do it, a lot of entrepreneurs who aren't in, you know, at least who aren't in the 20-something category, who can't be, you know, couch surfing with friends, are going to be in the position of maybe starting to build their idea, develop it while they have their day job.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tough to do because really being entrepreneurial is a commitment. It really can take over your life and in an exciting way because it's never work. It's always what you love. But yeah, for people going into entrepreneurship, you have to be building that plan. You have to be getting your ducks in a row before you actually jump into it full time. You've got to have validated for yourself, which I think is another benefit of Startup Weekend as you start. You know, you start those first steps from this is a neat idea to knowing, is this a neat idea that I can actually launch?
We're talking about Startup Weekend Evansville and entrepreneurship with Janet Efron and Demi Wetzel. They're two organizers of the event. I'm Micah Schweitzer. You're listening to The Trend. And Demi Wetzel, how stable was your life financially or otherwise when you were running your own startup?
It was actually pretty unstable. The first few months I moved back in with my parents, so I was trying to lower living costs as much as possible in order for me to, you know, be able to really go for this. And I did have a part-time day job and was in college, and I lowered my working hours at the day job so I could focus more on my venture. So wasn't living in too much comfort, but it was something I really believed in, and you know, I was willing to take those risks in order to get my business going.
And if this opportunity at Startup Weekend in Seattle hadn't opened up for you, would you still be doing it?
Yes, totally. Yes.
So this was not throwing in the towel.
No, I don't believe so. I think I'm not sure what I would call it. It was just a fantastic opportunity and a chance for me to, you know, kind of impact other people and provide this experience and be a part of the team that's offering this event to attendees around the world. It was just almost too good to be true. It's still hard to believe that I'm a team up here.
Well, congratulations on the new job.
Thank you.
Janet Efron, when we talk about what we need for a community to thrive entrepreneurially and what entrepreneurs need. You were considered, I guess, something of a den mother, so to speak, at the first Startup Weekend, where you were looking to the needs of those people who were in that intensive 54-hour laboratory setting. Aside from, you know, what we were talking about, like events and opportunities to meet other entrepreneurs on a very basic level, what's needed?
Oh, wow. That's a hard question. I mean, it's easy in Startup Weekend because at Startup Weekend, we make sure that people don't have to worry about food. They don't have to worry about where am I going to get information. They just have to worry about what they're working on. And man, as an entrepreneur, that's the greatest, greatest gift you can get is just uninterrupted time to focus on creative work and on productivity, both of which are really, really time consuming and both of which are part of entrepreneurship. You know, I think within the community, the more we build connections between entrepreneurs, the more they can provide that support.
Whose job is that? Is that a government issue? Is that a university issue?
As an entrepreneur, I kind of take the bootstrapping idea of let's make it happen. And I'm fairly new to the Evansville area. One thing I love is seeing there are amazing people who are making it happen. Now, some people are government agencies, but some of it's individuals. Drew Peronin with Tech on Tap has just started this monthly gathering of you know, founders and funders and developers to get together and have talks on relevant topics. And you start finding these niches of people, and you go, there are amazing people here, and people are starting to build the connections.
What are the best ideas that you saw at the first Startup Weekend Evansville that still stick out to you a year later?
My favorite one, and I don't think they've launched, I know they did some further research, was one that was involved a group that was looking at an eyeglass solution, but in conjunction kind of like Tom's Shoes with the buy one, give away a pair of shoes.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Of finding ways to use technology to actually provide eye exams to people in developing nations through computer and then provide them with glasses that would be durable and easily maintained. I thought that was a cool idea. There was another team that was doing work with reducing carbon emissions, looking at how could you improve the carbon emissions from cars. Then there were people looking at Evansville Nightlife, a great one about investing for students, of how do students with $5 a month or $5 a week start getting into investing.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what comes up at this second Startup Weekend Evansville. That's going to be on February 22nd through the 24th at the University of Southern Indiana, and enrollment is still open for that event.
Absolutely.
And what's your website?
It is evansville.startupweekend.org.
Janet Efron is one of the organizers. So is Demi Wetzel, who actually works at Startup Weekend in Seattle. Thank you both for your time.
Thank you, Micah.
Thanks, Micah.
You're listening to The Trend.
You're listening to The Trend on WNIN.org and WNIN-FM. Sounds like we're going to haul Sam Watterson out here to convince you to give a contribution to WNIN. Don't make us do that. Go ahead and call 423-5678 or toll free 1-800-264-9646. Or if you're listening to our podcast or listening to us online, head over to WNIN.org and you can click donate now to make your contribution there.
Next week, we'll eulogize 35mm film and explore the transition to digital film projection. And we'll talk with In the Mix, a live arts ensemble that's planning a one-day collaborative community production. To get in touch with The Trend, click on The Trend at WNIN.org, and you'll find links there for reaching us on Facebook, Twitter, and by email. Weekly podcasts are at our website as well. We're also on iTunes and in the NPR podcast directory. The Trend is a production of WNIN in collaboration with the Evansville Courier and Press. Ryan Reynolds is our producer at the Courier and Press. Tony Voss is our associate producer and engineer. The theme music was written by Jeffrey Osman. I'm Micah Schweitzer, and we'll talk again next week. This is WNIN-FM, Evansville, Henderson, and Owensboro.